Chapter 4, The Arrest. Only four senior police officers know anything about this. I want to tell you something now about my arrest and how it came about, as far as I know. It was really traumatic, so you'll need to bear with me. In my mind, I've never been a person who was going to have his house raided and be arrested. I'm an advocate and a part-time judge. I haven't committed any crime, and that's still true. This was a frightening and awful experience, not just for me, but for my family. It's had a traumatic and lasting impact on all of us. We watched the clock until 8:30 a.m. has passed every single morning. We call that arrest o'clock. On the 15th of February 2023, at 8:30 a.m. precisely, two different detectives appeared at my front door. They identified themselves and asked if they could come in. They were based at my local police station in Gala Shields, Borders Cops. They said something about it being better if they could come indoors, as I wouldn't know the reason for their visit. I'd been up early and working on a draft manuscript at the kitchen table. I invited them in and took them through to the kitchen. It did strike me as odd, as I made my way through with them, that this was the day before McLeod was supposed to get back to me about a date for a video recorded statement about the note. When we got into the kitchen, I sat back down at the table in front of my laptop. I was then informed by Detective Sergeant Jamie Gilmore that I was under arrest and that the matter related to allegations of sexual offences. I was silently shocked and frightened. I immediately thought of the advice and caution given to me by my friend Trond Mikkelbust on a visit to Oslo in 2018. Trond is an assistant chief of police in Norway. I was discussing the issues involved when I was considering re-engagement with Lady Smith after my cancer. He warned me that it was very easy to plant child sexual images on IT equipment. He predicted that that was something obvious someone might try. I immediately thought that was what was going to happen. I've been worried about it ever since. My mobile phone was then taken from me. I asked if I was allowed to email several draft chapters of work that I'd been working on for 2 years. Gilmore watched over my shoulder as I did so. I thought they'd be taking my laptop and all the other IT in the house too. I was confident there would be no problems or illegal material in any of it, but I didn't want to lose access to my hard work. I was also confident I hadn't committed any sexual or other offences. I still didn't know what the allegations related to, but I was very disturbed by what was unfolding in my home with my family present. I thought it was a complete setup, which it was. I was told that more detectives would be coming. A further six duly arrived and were let in. Overkill. They looked almost apologetic, crowding in the hallway. All very, very odd. All very planned by someone. Not by them, it appeared. One woman even asked to use the toilet while executing a search warrant. I asked if I could go upstairs and tell my wife what was happening. I was allowed to, but only with Gilmore right behind me, as if I was some kind of threat. In my own house. My wife was in the shower. My daughter was getting ready to go out, very oddly and awkwardly making her way through a crowd of six idle detectives standing in our hall. Again, shocking. When all were downstairs, and I was still sitting in the kitchen with Gilmore and his largely silent Northern Irish colleague under arrest, a search was conducted under a warrant which was shown to me. I didn't read the warrant, but I wish I had. I was extremely anxious by this stage. I wish I'd seen who granted it and where. I wish I'd had the presence of mind to see who had signed it. As I know now, someone who didn't care to analyse the need for corroboration of crucial facts. The, quotes, search was very unusual. This was the most targeted and planned search I've ever known of. It wasn't so much as a search as a race to exactly where in my house they knew they were going. The detectives knew exactly which rooms they were going to and exactly what items they were looking for. It was as if they'd been in my house before and knew the way around. It was as if they knew exactly where a tie and a jacket were, hanging, and where to collect them. It was weird. The particular tie and tweed jacket would never be worn together by me. They were never worn together by me. Weird. Apart from that, my current iPhone and two old iPhones, an old Windows phone, a broken iPad and some memory sticks, none of which were mine, were all taken from me and from my study where I showed them. There were laptops, desktops, and all sorts in various rooms. That's the thing about corruption, multi-layered and interconnected. Once you've experienced it in the legal system, you've no idea who's involved and to what extent or how far it goes. The stench. Once you've detected it, for sure, you're very sensitive to it. The cops insisted on being alone in every room in the house. This is what really spooked me and all of my family when we thought about it afterwards. What if the house was bugged? This has been a constant worry since 15th of February 2023. Not just for me, for all my family. And what about a plant of evidence on my devices? Child sexual images or something? For the next few weeks, that was our collective preoccupation. The stench, lingering, and fear. This isn't the country that you thought you lived in. It's more like what they tell you Putin's Russia is like. While I was sitting at the kitchen table, under arrest, I asked Gilmore, how was the report for arrest generated? I wanted to use neutral language because I literally had no idea about who, if anyone, might have alleged that I had committed a crime or what brought the cops to her house. I was also very anxious about the possibility of a plant of evidence. Gilmore told me that a complaint had been made by Emma Clark. I almost fell off the chair I was sitting on for reasons I'll explain later. Emma O'Meara, or Clark, is a Sheriff Clark depute at Selkirk Sheriff Court. I exchanged numerous consensual but secret between us iMessage, WhatsApp, emails and phone calls with her during parts of 2015 and 2016 up until about the end of July 2016. She initiated the exchanges of sexually explicit conversation and images with me and, as she told me, other lawyers and sheriffs. She told me on more than one occasion she had images of other sheriffs. Against that background, I wondered what exactly was coming. What could Emma Clark allege against me that didn't implicate herself? At about 10:30 a.m. I was taken in the back of an unmarked police car from my home by Gilmore and his colleague to Hoyk Police Station. Hoyk Police Station is a police headquarters for the Borders region. It's a huge complex, a massive building. The unmarked car was driven into a secure compound at the rear of the building, and I was then allowed to get out of one of the rear doors. I was escorted into the building, had my photograph and samples taken, and then charges were put to me. Scary. I was told that Hoyk Police Station had been locked down, quote, because of who you are. There were no other custodies, witnesses or other civilians in the building. It had been emptied entirely of its usual business. Now that must take some planning and preparation to arrange for Hoyk Police Headquarters to be closed down for the day. And because of who you are? That sort of spooked me. I'm a part-time sheriff and an advocate who hasn't worked since 28th of October 2016. Apart from that, I teach about developmentally appropriate forensic questioning of children. Maybe that's why McLeod had to go on holiday, so they could arrange to have Hoyk Police Headquarters closed down to frighten the hell out of me. Who I am would become clear in the monstering media on the 9th of March 2023. I am Lady Smith's opponent in litigation, and therefore fair game for any level of vicious action. I'm a person with no rights in the face of Lady Smith's supreme authority. I am othered. I need and deserve to be monstered. I'm not that important, except what makes me a bit unique maybe is that I've been doing quite a lot of what you might call whistleblowing about judges, lawyers, trafficking and organised child sexual abuse, and asserting my disability discrimination rights. Is that what they meant? Is that stench of corruption thing? Confused conundrums, as everyone was so nice and kind to me. It was as if they knew I was being set up and they felt sorry for me. Not like any police custody procedure that I'd ever seen, and I've seen and led evidence about many. One thing that was very, very strange was that the cops seemed almost apologetic. Not engaged with the task or with the evidence, it seemed. As if they were implementing someone else's work and plan. It had all been meticulously planned, but it was executed by local Galashiels-based cops. As it turns out, reporting to the Procurator Fiscal at Livingston, and not Selkirk. I smelled the stench strongly. That's unusual. Livingston happens to be where McLeod and McCann are based, in the National Historical Child Abuse Investigation Team, reporting to Ladysmith and the SCAI, in the same building as the PF. That's who I am. I'm the person who's to be defined in the mass media by where I stand in relation to Ladysmith. I didn't know that until the 9th of March 2023. Gilmer asked all the questions during the interview. Most of them were assertions. He read them from a pre-prepared script. It was a typed script. This is very unusual in my considerable experience of police interviews. He didn't depart from the script at all. His delivery was so clunky that I wondered whether he had prepared the questions. There didn't seem to be any engagement by either of the detectives with the evidence they were supposed to have assessed. Or were the questions prepared by someone else? I was asked about alleged images, dates, messages and events. It suggested to me that I became attracted to Emma Clark in 2016. Then I bombarded her with a series of explicit texts and images on the 9th and 10th of August 2016. These two specific dates were put to me. I wasn't shown any images or messages at all. That was weird. I haven't seen a transcript or recording of the interview since the 15th of February 2023. My answer generally was no comment, sometimes delivered with slightly detectable emotional effrontery at what was being asserted. Gilmore's very pleasant and gentle colleague didn't say a word. He simply didn't appear to be engaged in the interview process at all. It was as if he was just there to be present or to observe. He wasn't busy taking notes or reminding Gilmore of aspects of evidence. As I've told you, I've written about Police Scotland's price model of investigative interviewing that Gilmore and colleague were required to follow. In relation to the lead and second interviewer, the price model teaches as follows. I'm quoting from my ResearchGate chapter 13.3.7. Further focus in the price training. Following focus on the model and common interviewing challenges, such as formulation of current hypotheses and questions, common interviewing errors are highlighted, such as lack of preparation, quotes, attitude to burst people, negative comments such as, quotes, this is your only chance to tell us, oppressive tone and body language, lack of time, and lack of plan for the interview. Finally, interviewers are taught that it's essential to carefully consider the role of each of the two interviewers who are required to conduct each suspect interview. Both must work as a team in compiling the interview plan and in deciding tactics for the interview, such as who will be the first or lead and who will be the second interviewer. It's said to be essential that every interview must be led by one interviewer, with the other taking notes. And it's considered good practice for the lead interviewer to ask the second interviewer at intervals during the interview if there's anything to add. Interview notes are submitted as an evidential production and must be clear, concise, and accurate. The importance of the role of the second interviewer is emphasised, as is the need for an agreed sign to use in case anything has been missed so that it can be discussed prior to concluding the interview. The second interviewer's notes must be in order in the event of equipment failure. It appeared to me that neither interviewer was fully engaged with the subject matter of the evidence, and the line about, this is your chance to tell us your side of the story, was used. After the interview, I was charged. I hadn't had a proper opportunity at that stage to process and assess the evidence and what was put to me. However, once I'd done that later on over the next few days, it was obvious to me there wasn't sufficient evidence in law to charge me. I strongly suspect that the decision to charge, the analysis of the evidence, and the interview questions themselves were all formulated by someone else other than the cops who interviewed me. Someone other than the detectives who were representing to me that this was a case in which they had received a complaint which they had been responsible for investigating. I strongly suspect it to be untrue that these cops had received a complaint from Emma Clark, had had her phone analysed, and had prepared the interview questions and charges which were put to me. Untrue. I was then released on an undertaking to appear at Livingston Sheriff Court on the 2nd of March 2023. As a condition of that undertaking, I was informed that I wasn't permitted to enter a village in the Scottish borders. I wasn't even aware that Emma Clark lived in that village prior to that information being given to me. Is this how the police deal with real victims' location information? In any event, as I found out very soon afterwards, Emma Clark was by then travelling to Selkirk every working day, much closer to where she's likely to run into me than where she lives. Fear and alarm? I don't think so. I was subsequently released from the undertaking and its conditions by letter from the PF at Livingston dated 27th of April 2023. Gilmore and his colleague drove me home after I'd been released. They were friendly and chatting in the car on the way back. They were keen to assure me that only four very senior Police Scotland officers knew about my arrest. That wasn't the truth either. Campbell Dean knew about it in December 2022. Doesn't add up anyway. If that was true, the report would have had to be made to the PF at Selkirk. There had to have been a reason why the report was being made to the PF in Livingston. I strongly suspected that it was because of who I am. I suspected that MacLeod's team in Livingston, or others with links to Lady Smith and the SCAI, were involved. I was asking the cops if they knew police officers whom I'd taught on the joint investigative interview course at Tully Allen. They did. They thought one colleague was a very excellent child forensic interviewer, to a level they'd never witnessed before. I agree. Out of their league. I taught her. On arrival home, I was greeted at the door by my family. They all expected me to come in and tell them I'd been set up for something I hadn't done. Instead, I had to explain that I'd been set up on specific, untrue, fabricated allegations and evidence in relation to things which were in no way and to no extent criminal conduct. As you can imagine, days and weeks of acute family trauma followed. I suspect that was the plan all along, to destroy me and to destroy my family, to isolate me from all support, including the support of my family. Utterly callous and cruel. On 23rd of February 2023, MacLeod and McCann turned up at my house again at 12:10. I mentioned this at the end of the previous chapter. The visit was unannounced, and they didn't contact me in advance. I've narrated what was said later on. I got the impression that MacLeod was trying to intimidate me. He was asking me if I, quote, still want to make a statement about the note. I took it as an implicit threat that there might be more to follow if I did. I said I was keen to make a statement that I'd let them know when I was able to do that. I emphasised I'd get in touch with MacLeod. I gave him a contact number and he had my email address. He opened with his knowledge of what had happened last week. My arrest. How did or should he know about that? I wondered. He also finished by telling me that I'd not be able to teach at the college anymore. A reference to my pro bono work at Tully Allen. A sanction. I wonder if he'd been told about my brief and informal conversation with Gilmore and his partner on the way home after the arrest. This sanction was being imposed by detectives in relation to whom I'm supposed to be a witness. Detectives from a team that works with Lady Smith and the SCAI. The stench. It was then the penny dropped. Being required to give a statement to MacLeod and McCann was likely to facilitate the evidence being fed into the SCAI. That way, Lady Smith gets to be the judge of its accuracy, credibility and reliability. And of mine. There's no way that's going to happen, not ever. How did they know about the arrest? Why were they intimating a sanction or consequences as a result of the arrest? Why was I being asked if I still wanted to make a statement? Why wouldn't I? Was this a threat? Articulated by police officers associated with the SCAI? I was so concerned that MacLeod and his team with SCAI connection were involved in setting me up that I phoned MacLeod the next day, 24th of January 2023. I recorded the conversation. I recapped on all that had been discussed the previous day. I made it clear that I'd revert to him when I was ready to make a statement. He said something about the note being, quote, 99% historical. It had all been dealt with in the past and it was a revisit. A predetermined view. Confirmation bias. He also said something even more concerning about his imminent retirement and how maybe he'd be allowed to come back and hear what I had to say about the note and related matters even if he'd retired. Weird. As if it's just some old story, and as if I'd ever be giving a statement about that material to some randomer, some old codger who was no longer a police officer. The stench was absolutely overpowering. It was compounded by his team's apparent connection with Ladysmith and the SCAI. He referred to, quote, your note into the inquiry. He appeared to be very familiar with the inquiry, the SCAI. We left matters in the clear and agreed understanding that I would get back in touch with McLeod's team if and when I was prepared to give a statement about the note. McLeod was at pains to emphasise that there was no pressure of time for me to do so. After 24th of February 2023, McLeod has repeatedly approached me in a manner that I reasonably regard as intimidatory. Despite the clear agreement that I'd contact him, I received this email headed, quotes, Operation Coriade, 6 weeks later, on the 4th of April 2023. Morning, Mr. Halley. When we spoke in February, you asked that we delay the taking of your statement. I was just contacting you to confirm that this is still the case and to say that if your position changes at any point, please do not hesitate to contact me. Many thanks, John. John McLeod, Detective Sergeant, National Child Abuse Investigation Unit, Specialist Crime Division, West Lothian Civic Centre, Howden South Road, Livingston EH546FF. I didn't reply to the email immediately. It was the week before Easter. On 10th of April 2023, the Easter Monday holiday, McLeod sent two detectives to my home. I wasn't at home. The detectives came from Gala Shields. Two female officers. One of them said, is this where John stays, John Halley? Then she said, I've got a number for him to phone. It's from police up in Livingston. I don't know if you know if he's aware of it or anything. So I'll give you that, which was a card, and there's a contact number. I'm not sure what it's about, and he's just to give the DS a ring up, if that's okay. They left a card telling me to please contact DS John McLeod. McLeod had my phone number. He had my email address. This demonstrates that McLeod was sufficiently authoritative and felt free to direct the local Gala Shields CID in relation to me and to visit me. For their purposes, I am the subject of an ongoing criminal investigation. So McLeod is in a position to direct the Gala Shields cops to act, and they do as they're ordered by him. They're not even given information as to why they're being taken out of their normal, scarcely resourced duties and required to conduct a task for McLeod's team at Livingston. There's a very strong aroma. Only my wife and daughter were at home. They were intimidated. This smacks of intentional intimidation. There was no need to send two detectives to my home. My family are terrified of the police turning up unannounced following what happened on the 15th of February 2023. I'm a witness as far as McLeod's involvement's concerned. Power overreach. I formed the impression that my arrest was not a normal or typical arrest. It didn't appear to me to have been based on evidence investigated by the arresting police officers. There was an unusual link to the National Historical Child Abuse Investigation Team based in Livingston. That team services the SCAI. It reports to the PF in Livingston. DS Gilmore reported to the PF in Livingston. In the normal course, Gilmore would have reported to the PF at Selkirk. Then there was McLeod's uncomfortable approaches to me as a witness, not as an accused. McLeod has subsequently contacted me again, in May and June 2023, despite my clear warning that he should not. He alleged he was told to do so by his superiors, plural. Then he said, when questioned, that that was a typo. He meant his superior, singular, Detective Inspector Colin Moffat. I'm suspicious. D.I. Moffat works in a liaison role for the Scottish Child Abuse Inquiry. In addition to all of that, there have been concerning mixed messages received from the PF in Livingston. On the 12th of May 2023, I was advised by my solicitor, after several discussions with the PF, as follows. Quote, at this time, the position appears to be that the complainer, that's Emma Clark, has failed to engage properly with the police in the past by providing full statements and has now been somewhat evasive in relation to providing a further statement. The prosecutor has indicated that, come what may, he will be reporting the matter to Crown Council at the end of this month. The complainer appears to be somewhat reluctant and may not have furnished the police oblique prosecutor with all the information they properly require in order to determine whether the public interest requires a prosecution. Close quotes. It'll be immediately obvious that what was being imparted by the PF was that the complainer, Emma Clark, appears to be of questionable credibility and or reliability from the PF's perspective. You'll see immediately that's completely incongruous with the circumstances of the arrest, the search of my home, and the closing down of Hoyt Police Headquarters because of who I am. Not to mention proceeding to charge me without corroborated evidence. The stench is overpowering. And now it's all to be reported to Crown Council, a team headed by Dorothy Bain, wife of Lord Turnbull, a team which includes Gavin Dewar, and others I have known for a whole career, serviced and supported in Crown Office by Emma Clark's husband, among others. Ladysmith and the group think have direct connections to Crown Office too. Look at the twin-pronged SCAI and Crown Office response to the media reporting of Blackford having named Wares in the Commons. There is also a section or team in Crown Office which has been established to liaise with and service the SCAI. That's where Emma Clark's husband works. The connections are concerning in the circumstances. A decision was supposed to be taken by the PF by the end of May 2023 in relation to whether or not there was to be any attempted prosecution of me in the public interest. Now, at the time of finishing the book, in August 2023, there's been nothing. No update. It's impossible to resist the impression that it suits the authorities and the collaborators, Lady Smith, Lord Carloway and Dunlop, to have the criminal allegations hanging over my head without any actual proceedings having been commenced, with an incredible complainer. Incredible because she's lying and they know it. This is what corruption looks like. Dunlop has tried to use the possibility of criminal proceedings as a threat in discussions communicated to me by Andrew Smith KC, with threats to ruin me. What's the point in threatening what's already been done? The rule of lawyers. The silencing of a whistleblower about organised child sexual abuse in Scotland.